The Recital by John Ashbery. All right. The problem is that there is no new problem. It must awaken from the sleep of being part of some other old problem. And by that time, its new problematical existence will have already begun, carrying it forward into situations with which it cannot cope, since no one recognizes it, and it does not even recognize itself yet. Or know what it is. It is like the beginning of a beautiful day, with all the birds singing in the trees, reading their joy and excitement into its record as it progresses, and yet the progress of any day, good or bad, brings with it all kinds of difficulties that should have been foreseen, but never are, so that it finally seems as though they are what stifles it. In the majesty of a sunset, or merely in gradual dullness that gets dimmer and dimmer, until it finally sinks into flat, sour darkness. Why is this? Because not one-tenth, or even one-one-hundredth of the ravishing possibilities the birds sing about at dawn could ever be realized in the course of a single day, no matter how crammed with fortunate events it might turn out to be. And this brings on inevitable reproaches. Unmerited, of course. For we are all like children, sulking because they cannot have the moon. And very soon the unreasonableness of these demands is forgotten and overwhelmed in a wave of melancholy of which it is the sole cause. Finally we know only that we are unhappy, but we cannot tell why. We forget that it is our own childishness that is to blame. That this is true is, of course, beyond argument. But we ought to look into the nature of that childishness a little more, try to figure out where it came from and how, if at all, we can uproot it. And, when we first start to examine it, biased as we are, it seems as though we are not entirely to blame. We have all, or most of us, had unhappy childhoods. Later on, we try to patch things up, and as well, we entered the years of adulthood. It was a relief, for a while, that everything was succeeding. We had finally left that long, suffocating tunnel and emerged into an open place. We could not yet see very well due to the abrupt change from darkness to daylight, but we were beginning to make out things. We embarked on a series of adult relationships from which the sting and malignancy of childhood were absent. Or so it seemed. No more hiding behind bushes to get a secret glimpse of the others. No more unspeakable rages of jealousy or the suffocation of unrequited and unrealizable love. Or at least these things retreated into their proper perspective as new things advanced into the foreground. New feelings as yet too complex to be named or closely inspected, but in which the breathless urgency of those black-and-white situations of childhood happily played no part. It became a delight to enumerate all the things in the new world our maturity had opened up for us, as inexhaustible in pleasures and fertile pursuits as some more down-to-earth Eden, from which the utopian joys as well as the torments of that older fantasy world had been banished by a more reasonable deity. But, as the days and years sped by, it became apparent that the naming of all the new things we now possessed had become our chief occupation, that very little time for the mere tasting and having of them was left over, and that even these simple, tangible experiences were themselves subject to description and enumeration, or else they too became fleeting and transient, as the song of a bird that is uttered only once and disappears into the backlog of vague memories, where it becomes as a dried, pressed flower, a wistful parody of itself. Meanwhile, all our energies are being absorbed by the task of trying to revive those memories, make them real, as if to live again were the only reality. And the overwhelming variety of the situations we have to deal with begins to submerge our efforts. It becomes plain that we cannot interpret everything. We must be selective, And so the tale we are telling begins little by little to leave reality behind. It is no longer so much our description of the way things happen to us as our private song, sung in the wilderness. Nor can we leave off singing, for that would be to retreat to the death of childhood, to the mere acceptance and dull living of all that is thrust upon us, a living death, in a word. We must register our appraisal of the moving world that is around us, but our song is leading us on now, farther and farther into that wilderness, and away from the shrouded but familiar forms that were its first inspiration, on and on into the gathering darkness. Is there no remedy for this? It is as though a day, which had begun brilliantly in the blaze of a new sunrise, become transfixed at a certain subtle change in the light, can cast a chill over your heart, or the sight of a distant, thin ribbon of cirrus ebbing into space can alter everything you have been feeling, dropping you back years and years into another world in which its fragile remainder of inexorable change was also the law as it is here, today. You know now the sorrow of continually doing something that you cannot name, of producing automatically, as an apple tree produces apples, this thing there is no name for. And you continue to hum as you move forward, but your heart is pounding. All right. Then this new problem is the same one, and that is the problem, that our apathy can always renew itself, drawing energy from the circumstances that fill our lives, but emotional happiness blooms only once, like an annual, leaving not even roots or foliage behind when its flower withers and dies. We are forced to recognize that we are still living in the same old state of affairs, and that never really went away, even when it seemed to. Well, what can we do about it? Because even though the hydra-headed monster of apathy can grow a new head each day to slash back at us with, more fearsome than the one we just succeeded in cutting off, so too nothing says that we aren't to fight back at it, using the sword that our condition of reasoning beings has placed in our hands, although the task seems hopeless, and there is no end to the heads in sight, we are within our rights in fighting back. The weapon is ours to wield, and it is possible that by dint of continually doing so, we might at length gain a slight foothold or edge, for the enemy's powers, though superhuman, are not inexhaustible. We are basically certain that nothing is except the capacity for struggle that unites us, foe to foe, on the vast plane of life. We are like sparrows fluttering and jabbering around a seemingly indifferent prowling cat. We know that the cat is stronger, and therefore we forget that we have wings, and too often we fall in with the cat's plans for us, afraid, and therefore unable to use the wings that could have saved us by bearing us aloft, if only for a little distance, not the boundless leagues we had been hoping for and insisting on, but enough to make a crucial difference, the difference between life and death. It almost seems how often this locution has been forced on us, when we were merely trying to find words for a more human expression of our difficulty, something closer to home. And with this formula, our effort flies off again, having found no place to land. As though there were something criminal in trying to understand a little this uneasiness that is undermining our health, causing us to think crazy thoughts and behave erratically. We can no longer live our lives properly. Every good impulse is distorted into something like its opposite. The people we see are like parodies of reasonable human beings. There is no spiritual model for our aspirations. No vademecum beckons in the light around us. There is only the urge to get on with it all. It is like the difference between someone who is in love and someone who is merely good in bed. There is no vital remnant which would transform one's entire effort into an image somewhat resembling oneself. Meanwhile, everything conspires to protect the business-as-usual attitude of the diurnal scenery. No leaf or brick must be found out of place. No timber ring false, lest the sickening fakery of the whole wormy apparatus, the dry rot behind the correct facade, suddenly become glaringly and universally apparent, its shame at last real for all to see. Appearances must be kept up at whatever cost until the day of judgment, and afterward, if possible. We are trying with mortal hands to paint a landscape which would be a faithful reproduction of the exquisite and terrible scene that stretches around us. No longer is there any question of adjusting a better light on things, to show them ideally as they may never have existed, of taking them out from under the sun to place them in the clean light that meditation surrounds them with. Youth and happiness, the glory of first love, are all viewed naturally now, with all their blemishes and imperfections. Even the wonderful poetry of growing a little older and realizing the important role fantasy played in the Sturm und Drang of our earlier maturity is placed in its proper perspective, so as not to exaggerate the importance of the general pattern of living of the disabused intellect, whose nature it is to travel from illusion to reality and on to some seemingly superior vision, it being the quality of this ebbing and flowing motion rather than the relevance of any of its isolated component moments that infuses a life with its special character. Until, accustomed to disappointments, it seemed as though we had triumphed over the limitations of logic and blindfold passion alike. The masterpiece we were on the point of achieving was classic in the sense of the Greeks, and simultaneously informed by a romantic ardor minus the eccentricity. And this all but terminated work was the reflection of the ideal shape of ourselves, as we might have lived had we been gifted with foreknowledge, and also the ability to go back and retrace our steps. And so, pleased with it and with ourselves, we stepped back a few paces to get the proper focus. Any reckoning of the sum total of the things we are is, of course, doomed to failure from the start. That is, if it intends to present a true, wholly objective picture, from which both artifice and artfulness are banished. No art can exist without at least traces of these, and there was never any question but that this rendering was to be made in strict conformity with the rules of art. Only in this way could it approximate most closely the thing it was intended to reflect and illuminate that which was its inspiration, by achieving the rounded feeling almost of the forms of flesh and the light of nature, and being thus equipped for the maximum number of contingencies which, in its capacity as an aid and a tool for understanding, it must know how to deal with. Perhaps this was where we made our mistake. Perhaps no art, however gifted and well-intentioned, can supply what we were demanding of it. Not only the figured representation of our days, but the justification of them, the reckoning and its application, so close to the reality being lived that it vanishes suddenly in a thunderclap with a loud cry. The days fly by, but they do not cease. By night, rain pelted the dark planet. In the morning, all was wreathed in false smiles and admiration. But the daylight had gone out of the day, and it knew it. All the pine trees seemed to be dying of a mysterious blight. There was no one to care. The sky was still that nauseatingly cloying shade of blue, with a thin ribbon of cirrus about to disappear and materialize over other alien lands far from here. If only, one thought, one had begun by having the courage of one's convictions instead of finishing this way. But once burned, twice shy, one proceeds along one's path, murmuring idiotic formulas like this to give oneself courage, noticing too late that the landscape isn't making sense anymore. It is not merely that you have misapplied certain precepts not meant for the situation in which you find yourself, which is always a new one that cannot be decoded with reference to an existing corpus of moral principles, but there is even a doubt as to our own existence. Why, after all, were we not destroyed in the conflagration of the moment, our real and imaginary lives coincided, unless it was because we never had a separate existence beyond that of those two static and highly artificial concepts whose fusion was nevertheless the cause of death and destruction, not only for ourselves, but in the world around us. But perhaps the explanation lies precisely here. What we were witnessing was merely the reverse side of an event of cosmic beatitude for all except us, who were blind to it, because it took place inside us. Meanwhile, the shape of life has changed definitively for the better for everything, but perhaps the explanation lies precisely here. What we were witnessing was merely the reverse side of an event of cosmic beatitude for all except us, who were blind to it, because it took place inside us. Meanwhile, the shape of life has changed definitively for the better for everyone on the outside. They are bathed in the light of this tremendous surprise, as in the light of a new sun, from which only healing and not corrosive rays emanate. They comment on the miraculous change, as people comment on the dazzling beauty of a day in early autumn, forgetting that for the blind man in their midst, it is a day like any other, so that its beauty cannot be said to have universal validity, but must remain fundamentally in doubt. The single source of so much pleasure and pain is therefore a thing that one can never cease wondering upon. On the one hand, such boundless happiness for so many. On the other, so much pain concentrated in the heart of one. And it is true that each of us is this multitude, as well as that isolated individual. We experience the energy and beauty of others as a miraculous manna from heaven. At the same time, our eyes are turned inward to the darkness and emptiness within. All records of how we came here have been effaced, so there is no chance of working backward to some more primitive human level. The spiritual dichotomy exists once and for all time, like the mind of creation, which has neither beginning nor end. And the proof of this is that we cannot even imagine another way of being. We are stuck here for eternity, and we are not even aware that we are stuck. So natural and even normal does our quandary seem. The situation of Prometheus, bound to the crags for endless ages and visited daily by an eagle, must have seemed so to him. We were surprised once long ago, and now we can never be surprised again. What is it for you, then, the insistent now that baffles and surrounds you in its loose-knit embrace, that always seems to be falling away and yet remains behind, stubbornly drawing you, the unwilling spectator who had thought to stop only just for a moment, into the sphere of its solemn and suddenly utterly vast activities on a new scale, as it were, that you have neither the time nor the wish to unravel? It always presents itself as the turning point, the bridge leading from prudence to a timorous capacity, in Wordsworth's phrase. But the bridge is a bridge of size the next moment, leading back into the tired regions from which it sprang. It seems as though every day is arranged this way. The movement is the majestic plodding one of a boat crossing a harbor, certain of its goal and upheld by its own dignity on the waves, a symbol of the patient, fruitful activity, but the voyage always ends in a new key, although at the appointed place. A note has been added that destroys the whole fabric, and the sense of the old as it was intended. The day ends in the darkness of sleep. Therefore, since today, a day that is really quite cool despite the deceptive appearance of the sunlight on things, is to really be the point when everything changes for better or for worse. It might be good to examine it, see how far it goes, since the far reaches of sleep are to be delayed indefinitely. It is not even a question of them anymore. What matters is how you are going to figure your way out of this new problem, which has again come home to roost. Will the answer be another delay, prolonged beyond the end of time, and disguised once again as an active life intelligently pursued? Or Is it to be a definitive break with the past? Either the no of death shutting you up in a small cell-like space, or a yes whose vibrations you cannot even begin to qualify or imagine? As I thought about these things, dusk began to invade my room. Soon, the outlines of things began to grow blurred, and I continued to think along well-rehearsed lines like something out of the past. Was there really nothing new under the sun? Or was this novelty, the ability to take up these tattered enigmas again and play with them until something like a solution emerged from them, only to grow dim at once and fade like an ignis fatuus, a specter mocking the very reality it had so convincingly assumed? No. But this time something real did seem to be left over. Some more solid remnant of the light as the shadows continued to pile up. At first it seemed to be made merely of bits and pieces of the old, haggard situations, rearranged perhaps to give a wan impersonation of modernity and fecundity. Then it became apparent that certain new elements had been incorporated, though perhaps not enough of them to change matters very much. Finally, these proportions remaining the same, something like a different light began to dawn, to make itself felt, just as the first glimmers of day are often mistaken for a false dawn, and one waits a long time to see whether they will go away before gradually becoming convinced of their authority, even after it has been obvious for some time. So these tremors slowly took on the solidity, the robustness of an object. And by that time, everything else had gone away, or retreated so far into the sidelines that one was no longer conscious of those ephemera that had once seemed the very structure, the beams and girders defining the limits of the ambiguous situation one had come to know, and even to tolerate, if not to love. The point was the synthesis of very simple elements in a new and strong, as opposed to old and weak, relation to one another. Why hadn't this been possible in the earlier days of experimentation, of bleak, barren living that didn't seem to be leading anywhere, and it couldn't have mattered less? Probably because not enough of what made it up had taken on that look of worn familiarity, like pebbles polished over and over by the sea, that made it possible for the old to blend inconspicuously with the new, in a union too subtle to cause any comment that would have shattered its purpose forever. But already, it was hard to distinguish the new elements from the old, so calculated and easygoing was the fusion, the partnership that was the only element now, and which was even now fading rapidly from memory, so perfect was its assimilation by the bystanders and decor, that in other times would have filled up the view, and that now were becoming as transparent as the substance that was giving them back to life. A vast wetness, as of sea and air combined, and a single smooth, anonymous matrix without surface or depth was the product of these new changes. It no longer mattered very much whether prayers were answered with concrete events, or an oracle gave a convincing reply, for there was no longer anyone to care in the old sense of caring. There were new people watching and waiting, conjugating in this way the distance and emptiness, transforming the scarcely noticeable bleakness into something both intimate and noble. The performance had ended. The audience streamed out. The applause still echoed in the empty hall. But the idea of the spectacle as something to be acted out and absorbed still hung in the air long after the last spectator had gone home to sleep.